Welcome to the Tim Hill Podcast. If you have the time, you can not only listen to the episodes, but you can also watch all the shows, and you'll find the links in the description below. Thank you. Welcome to Series 3 of the Tim Hill Podcast. In the last two series, I've told you about my life. I've met many interesting people along the way who have become my friends, and what they all have in common is they have fascinating stories of their own, which they are happy to share with you now. Thank you for listening. Welcome to the Tim Hill Podcast. In this episode, I'm going to have a chat with Janet. She's going to tell us all about her life. So Janet, if you could tell me when and where you were born, and if you can describe what it was like where you grew up, the schools you went to, and the education that you received. Over to you, Janet.
Well, hello, team, and wonderful listener as you're tuning into today's conversation. I'm so thrilled to share my journey. I was born in Soviet Union. Yes, if you know the history, last century, there was a country like this. It's no longer on the map, but it was there before. And I was born in 1979. Actually, my ancestry are from half Russia, half Ukraine. And my grandparents moved to the Uzbekistan country, right? Russia. Yep. Currently is Uzbekistan, but before it was a part of Soviet Union. So I was born near the capital in a small little village. And my mom and dad fell in love. And my mom was 19 at that time. And here you go. I come along and they were puzzled how to name me. My mom was thinking she's going to give me some kind of sweet name, very lullaby, very kind of, gentle and such. And my dad came to the birthing center at that time and he said he wants to name me Jana. And she's like, why is it Jana? Well, you know that fierce and strong woman in France, Jeanne d'Arc, that was fighting for freedoms. I want to name her Jeanne. And my mom was puzzled and she's like, this is my little sweet baby. She's a lullaby. She doesn't look anything like Jeanne. But my dad held his foot and he said, no, that's her name. And here I come. I guess some of the spiciness of Jeanne d'Arc is flowing in my blood as well. So as I was growing up, sadly, my young, amazing dad caught very bad pneumonia that then transferred into very fast-track cancer. And he passed away from lung cancer literally in 3 or 4 months. My mom was carried for him. I was 10 months at a time. And until this moment, I cannot imagine what she went through. So little that I do remember about my dad is the stories from my mom and some pictures that I hold very dear. And, growing up as the only child of a single mom in Soviet Union was no joke. You know, I remember as I was about probably 6 years old, the winter was harsh and my mom didn't have money to buy me a jacket. And she was thinking, how is she going to come up with the money to get me a jacket to keep me warm? And one of the old men in our neighborhood, he lived in an apartment nearby. He actually stopped by and he's like, why she doesn't have warm clothes? And my mom shared that she's looking for money to get me a jacket. And he actually pulled his wallet and gave her money. And he said, go get that kid a jacket. In the hard days and the hard times, there's still good people around and there's still the kindness of hearts. And I feel right now we are in such a turmoil and such a difficult times worldwide. And I just want to say, we need to ignite that love and kindness in our hearts. And as we all do that as a humanity, I think we'll be in a much better place. The other memory from my childhood I remember is that...
Can I just ask a couple of questions at the moment?
Yes, please do.
So you're half and half. So you're half Ukrainian, half Russian. You must have some
You must have some stuff going on in your mind at the moment with what's going on.
It's tough. I don't have any family, immediate family that I know of in Ukraine, but I'm sure some kind of ancestries. I probably have some kind of, you know, cousins or, you know, some kind of a blood relatives walking on that land. But it's hard. And, you know, reflecting at what is going on right now between the two brotherhood countries, they're really two brother nations. It's heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. And I think it's devastating for both nations. And I think that in the circumstances where we are, for me personally, as a believer, as a Christian, I cannot do much, but I can pray. You know, I cannot do much to affect anything with my, you know, physically or anyhow, but I can pray. And I think a lot of people, they drive themselves into this difficult space where they agonize about the things that are happening.
Yeah.
And that's not healthy either. So I think we do need to watch out for our own mental health, for our own emotions, and do the best we can to cope sometimes, and just wish that the blood will not be shed unnecessary on either part, and wish some resolution and wish some peace, more peace and more unity in this world.
Yeah. So moving outside, when did you move down to Uzbek?
So Uzbekistan, actually my grandparents moved there in 1920s. That was a time where in Ukraine there was a very severe famine. So the ancestor on my dad's side, they moved, my grandparents moved to Uzbekistan. And then my mom's side is from Russia. So they also moved to Uzbekistan. Uzbekistan is a very amazing land where there are so many roots and nationalities and diverse races are coming along. There are, you know, the natives, Uzbek people are phenomenal people. And there are a lot of languages and Russians, of course. There was a 70 plus years of Soviet Union that Russian was pretty much, you know, the only language majority people used. But once the Uzbekistan gained independence in 1991, then it established itself as its own country. And really, I think the desire was to go back to the Uzbek roots, to establish Uzbek language as the national language, to encourage the population to speak more, to make it, you know, more infiltrated in schools and studied more. Although, there is still a lot of, you know, almost a century, you can't erase it. So there's a lot of Russian speaking people there. And there's, you know, different backgrounds and communities, like Korean communities, you'll be surprised. So a lot of North Koreans actually migrated to Uzbekistan also in the beginning of last century and formed the communities there, very profound and prevailed with their own, you know, customs and amazing, delicious foods. So yes, that's how my parents were born there on that land, and I was born there as well. Although I don't consider myself Uzbek because it's ethnically I'm not Uzbek, I'm Russian, but I technically not Russian either because I was not born and grew up in Russia. So it's a tricky, tricky way. How do you describe yourself? So I like to say it that way. I was, you know, sourced from Russia. I was designed in Uzbekistan and I was made in the United States because now, hey, I'm in the United States for almost 16 years and it does shape me to who I am today living here in this country.
So let's have a look at Uzbekistan. What was it like where you actually grew up in Uzbekistan?
So when I grew up, it was still Soviet Union. The independence was in 1991, so I was about 12 years old when, you know, the Soviet Union fell apart. And that was an interesting observation to just see how things were shifting. And there's so many things that used to be a certain way, you know, kind of became shattered in a way. So growing up to the age of 12 was, what I remember is happy childhood. You know, I think as children, we tend to find happiness in small things. The only thing that I was felt as a child a little lonely because I was by myself. My mom was working hard to try to provide for us. And she worked a lot. She was always at work. I was just happy kid. I was wandering around the area by myself, playing with sticks and toys and whatever I had. And what I remember, I was picking up kittens, you know, all over the place and bringing them home, like one at a time. And my mom, I said, she's like, you bring me another homeless kitten. And I'm like, Mom, I don't have a brother or sister. Can I at least have a kitten? So she'll wash it, she'll clean it. And, you know, the kitten stay with us for a couple of weeks and then we'll find, you know, she'll find a new home for it because it's too much for Kate to care. Then I'll bring another one. So here you go. It was a lot of fun actually growing up. I do remember though, there was a challenges right before the Soviet Union fell apart. You know, we had to stay in a line to get bread and there was only certain things that you can get. You know, but I don't really see it that way. And I was very picky eater. So my mom was always trying to feed me, force feed me. And she's like, you gotta eat more, you gotta eat more. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to eat it. So I was like, when I grow up and have my own kids, I'm never going to force feed them. Little did I know. You're like, I remember that my mom was trying to feed me because I was skinny and she was thinking I was not, you know, kind of chunky enough or healthy enough, so to speak. And so it was looking back, it was good times, good times.
So what was your junior school like?
My junior school like? So I was living in this small town. And I was just always a high achiever. I always want to get best grades, being a leader in the class. The difference between the education in the United States and back there is that in a small location, we had two classes. So we had, you know, A and B class. So like first class and second class. And once you form the class or form the, that grade area, you'll go with the same students from kindergarten, from first grade all the way up to 12th grade. So you have the same peers and students that you're with pretty much your whole school year. And so I was studying German at that time as my second language. And then there was an opportunity of a gentleman that, you know, my family knew very well. He came by and he said that he has a way to sponsor me to go and study abroad if I study English and if my English is fluent enough. So when I was at my 10th grade, in the junior years, I decided to switch from German to English and went on to study very diligently. I actually went out and got a tutor that I worked with 2 times a week. And in the 2 years, I was able to really ramp up my language skills. That I feel really has propelled and set me to why I'm here with you talking today and where I am today. So,
well, I must say that your English is a lot better than my Russian.
Well, thank you. And it's a lot of dedication and study, and I feel like it pays off when you study something seriously and you put your head into it, especially for young people, anybody who is, you know, just getting off school or going to college and kind of wondering what to do, just pick a topic and dive into it and study diligently. It will pay off. So for me, it was really English. And after I graduated with honors, all A's, of course, as a high achiever, I couldn't do less than that. That situation and that promise actually didn't come through. So at that time, the gentleman who promised, he said, I'm not going to be able to sponsor you at this time. So I decided to go ahead and apply to go to the state university. And the only way that I could get accepted there without having to pay high education fees, which my mom had no way to afford, is that I would be at the top 5%. And they would only allow, the government would sponsor 5 students who will be 95 and higher. So if you have someone who gets 100, 97, 96, if you get 95, so basically whoever gets the highest, the 5 top will get the sponsorship. And the first year I studied as I could, and I went on, and I was, you know, about third under the line. So it was high grade, but was not good enough to get in. So I said, okay, I'm going to buckle down. I'll get my another year and I'm going to study it. And I studied, and it was, you know, English major. And I came to that day to the university to see my results. And I was literally first under the line. So my heart broke. But at that time, God found me. And once the Soviet Union fell apart, then a lot of Christians came into the country and proclaimed the gospel. And I was saved and born again at the age of 16, which I'm so grateful for. So I had a Bible with me. And I sat down and I had a little chat with God, and I said, God, so why do I fail? I've put so much effort. I trusted. I wanted, you know, I felt that's the best for me. And I opened the Bible and there was a verse for me. And the verse says that your ear has not heard, your eyes have not seen. It hasn't come to the mind of a man what God has prepared for those who love him. And I cried happily. Because that was speaking to me to say that, hey, you know, I know better what it is for you. Your responsibility is to love me, and everything else is in my hands. And I said, okay, thank you, God. I got the message. I come home, you know, and I actually stopped on the way home to at mom's work. And I was just so happy because I knew God's giving me a promise. And my mom was like, you got it. You got it. You got accepted. Like, no, I don't. It's like, you're joking. You can't be so happy and, you know, not be accepted. And I said, no, but I know God's giving me a promise that he has something that I cannot even imagine prepared for me. And she's like, well, if it is, then it is. And so after that journey, I had an opportunity to actually apply to work at the South Korean company. They just opened a textile company in town. And I applied as a translator, but technically with no college education, but there was little people in my town that could speak English. And when they opened up the textile company, they sent out the management that are South Koreans, that they only speak Korean and English. They could not speak Russian or Uzbek. And they were looking for people to translate so they can actually just, you know, talk with the workforce.
Yeah.
And I got accepted. And that was pretty much my business education for 5 years that actually paid me well while I was getting that education. So sometimes as you listen to this conversation and you are stressed or you are feeling defeated or you're feeling things don't go the way you see them or you have wanted something and you didn't come by, just want to encourage you today that, you know, trust in God, whether you believe it or not. Turn your heart to God and seek him, because sometimes in our life circumstances, things don't play the way we see them or want them, but it is for better. And when we accept it with such a way and find the gift and opportunity in the situation, then, you know, we discover later on that indeed it was a blessing. So had I probably got accepted in that university again, I probably wouldn't be talking to you today, because at that job, I had an access to the internet. I learned how to be on the computer, and I logged in into a Christian website to find friends, Christian friends all over the world. And that's how I met my husband. And had I not been in that job, I wouldn't be talking to you today, Tim.
No. So you obviously speak Uzbek as well as Russian.
I speak just a tiny bit Uzbek, as much as you speak Russian, my friend.
So in Uzbekistan is right next to Afghanistan.
Yes.
I guess, that would have all been over. So when the Russians went into Afghanistan and it didn't end well for them, did you see any of that when you were growing up?
That I remember vividly one occasion where we had a lady in our small town that my mom knew very well. And she had a young son that was drafted into the military. And of course, the worst mother's nightmare is for your son to go to war. So, and she had, that's the only son that she had. And, you know, her husband passed away. And when they were drafted, when he was drafted, she was just crying and her heart was so heavy. And, you know, she felt because he got killed and sent back home, you know, in a way that they buried him. And it was a devastation that kind of was hard to watch as a kid. Not that it touched me close by, but it was enough for me to observe the situation and kind of see that. And because my dad, my father passed away so early as well, we often would go to the cemetery to, you know, kind of stay there and give him honor and tender somewhat for this, for the place where he was buried. And there was right next to it, there was a place for that young man. And she, you know, she put a gorgeous stone in there with his photo and so many flowers, the fresh flowers, all the time. So I think that is the memory that calls me to what was happening, is that people were dying, young people were dying unnecessarily in any war.
So let's bring it a little bit further forward. So you spent 6 years working at this South Korean company. You got a really good education in there, learning computer skills.
Business, global business, working with clients global. All over the world, shipping cottons and yarns. Yeah, it was fun.
Mm-hmm. So what happened at the end of that, working for the South Koreans? Where did you move on to?
Yeah, so I moved up into being the second, really being a supervisor, secondhand to the manager. And I was working a lot with the logistics because a part of where I was working in the export department, we were sending experts of yarns and fabrics and cottons they were producing at that factory all over the world. So I built a lot of good relationship with the logistics companies, and they had some Korean companies, some European companies. So when I felt like I've learned everything I could in that department, in that space, I'm like, what is next for me? And a very good friend that I built a relationship with, somewhat of a peer from Belgium company, called me and she said, well, we're looking for, you know, an expert in logistics to come and join our team here in town, and wanted to offer you this opportunity. I said, oh yeah, let's do that. It's something different. And although I was familiar with what it takes to move cargoes and what documents you need to prepare and things like that, it was still different because it's not just one type of cargo, it's different type of cargoes and different kind of modes of transportation. So it was Belgium logistics company that I joined, and I worked for them for close to 2 years. And really, it was really interesting to learn how to move all sorts of things in different modes throughout the world. And then that manager, that lady actually, that was in that company, moved to Russia, Moscow, and opened her own freight forwarding company. And then she calls me and she said, I need help to get this business off the ground. Come join me. So that's how I moved to Moscow and lived there for about a year.
So let's just take a slight step back.
Yes.
Working in logistics in Uzbekistan, what was the main mode of transport that you were using to export stuff out of the country? Was it trucks that were driving across?
Yeah, so it is containers. You load things in the containers, put them on, you know, containers on top of the tractor trailers, take them to the rail station and hook them up to the rail. And then the rail will go, depending on where you're shipping, either to China's rail, or it will go up through Kazakhstan to Russia and then to Russian ports, or it will go through Tallinn, Estonia, to European ports. Or you can put them on a truck and truck them all the way to Europe. So there are different modalities that you could use. And then you will take that container, put them on the vessel, and then ship to the ports wherever they need to go. So that was the main mode transportation. Of course, there is a truck that you would load up, fill it up, seal it up, and have the truck go all the way through, you know, 5, 6, 7 borders. And then there is air transportation. So you will just build a small portion, small air containers, and then do the air freight.
I guess it'd have to be some fairly high value materials to air freight out, because air freight's, I mean, expensive, and it goes on weight and all the rest of it.
Yes, mainly.
So most of the stuff went in trucks and trains, didn't it? Oh, excellent. So let's have a look at going off to Moscow.
Yes. Moscow was fun. It was really good because it's a completely different setting. It's like coming from a village, although I moved to capital Tashkent and lived there in Uzbekistan for quite some years. Moscow was a very high speed, high intensity life. It's go, 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 go. It's like New York to me. It's like that kind of style. You're just constant on the go. Yeah. And it was really, really fascinating to get adjusted a little bit to the way that people live their lives.
Yeah. So this was before or after the wall came down and independence and
after
the breakup of Russia.
So that
after
was the independence, the Soviet Union fell down and dissipated in 1991 when I was about 12 years old. And that was about 25 and about 2005, 2004. That's when I moved to Moscow. So it's 12 years after. So it was pretty much different countries at that time. So Uzbekistan was an independent country for a decade, and then Russia was an independent country for a decade. And yes, it was just interesting to observe the different type and different approach to life in different place.
So what passport did you come under?
Uzbek. Uzbek passport. That's my nationality. And for passport, I'm Uzbek. Although it's interestingly enough, because nationality, when you look back, is really where your ancestry is from. So in my passport, although my passport is Uzbek, my nationality is Russian. It's very complicated, right? But yes, so I came with the Uzbek passport, and at that time you could come and get like a permit, like a very easy process, like a work permit, and you can work and stay there for a period of time and just renew your permit without having to apply for lengthy visas and you know, change your citizenship and stuff like that. So I stayed there for about close to a year. And at that time, my relationships with my future husband worked out in a way that he decided to do a fancy visa and invite me to come visit him here in the United States. So I came here in the United States in 2006 in May. He proposed in June and we got married in July. And I've been here since then.
So in the build-up, obviously, to him asking you going over, how long had you known him?
I know him for about 2 years. We were pen-palling for about a year and a half, and then he decided to come visit. I was still in Tashkent in Uzbekistan at that time. And the reason for a visit that he mentioned, he wanted to do a video on how Christians live in Uzbekistan. And technically, Uzbekistan is a Muslim country right now. And he's read and heard that there is not, you know, an easy way to practice Christianity, to practice your faith. You can't really go and share gospel with someone on the street. And then you have to have a specific government registered, you know, church location to go visit. So you can just freely gather and sing, you know, hymns or praises to God in your houses. Mm. So he wanted to come visit and do kind of a little bit of a video introductory understanding to what it is, to show it to his church members and meet me. So I said, that was a good reason. I can't really reject that. We were friends at that time. And I said, okay, well, I'll come around. I'll show you, you know, I'll take you to different places. We'll look at different denominations and churches, and you could do your little video thing. And little lo and behold, I think it was stayed for about 3 weeks. We kind of fell in love. But I said, I'm not sure, you're here for 3 weeks and then you're gone for, you know, on another side of the world. I'm not sure how it's all going to work out. But I think his feelings were strong enough that he determined and persevered, and he decided to bring me here. And I think because of his determination, that's how it all worked out after all.
So where is he now?
He is, where is he right now?
Yeah, where are you now?
Where I am now, in Jacksonville, Florida. Yeah.
Jacksonville, mm-hmm. The old Jaguars, yes. Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Have you been to a game? Do you understand it?
I have been to a game a couple times. I somewhat try to understand it, but I find that it is not my cup of tea.
That's very
But my husband likes it. He likes the Jaguars. He loves to watch it. And I said, you know, I can watch it, but I don't really enjoy it.
So you're more of a rugby person, I can see that.
I'm not into sports as much. And
What about Bushkazi?
Say it again.
Bushkazi.
What is a Bushkazi?
That's what they play in sort of Afghanistan. I'm sure they do it up in Uzbek as well, where they're racing around on horses with a dead goat.
No, they don't do this anymore. I think it's an old story, fairy tale.
No, I've seen it. I've watched it in Afghanistan.
Afghanistan possibly, but I don't think Uzbekistan as much.
I'm sure it came down. I'm sure Uzbek's a horseman.
Not as much.
No.
Not that I recall it.
Okay. Right. So you've now arrived in America.
Yes.
You've within 3 months you're married.
Yes.
And what did you do for work? Did you manage to get a green card straight away?
Yes. So as soon as as soon as we got married, my husband went on and he helped to apply for a green card. And my green card, I think, was coming within 6 months or so. Very quick process at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So I stayed home. And when I got my notification when I was about to get my green card, they actually give you a work permit first and then the green card arrives.
Yeah.
And I stayed home for about 4 months. Or so. And then I said, it's too boring. I can't do this. So I lumped my resume together and sent it off to the first recruiter down the street and got an interview and got a job in 3 weeks. My in-laws, my father-in-law, his jaw literally like, he was at that time, he was military and he was actually teaching the military. The people who are coming off to integrate into civilian world, he was teaching them how to put their resume together, how to apply for jobs and things. There are a lot of people that are struggling with how to present themselves and get a job. And he was surprised. He's like, let me look at your resume. So I gave him my resume. And he's like, who wrote a resume for you? I'm like, I did. And he's like, I can't believe you got a good paying job in 3 weeks. And you haven't even green card in your hands. I'm like, I guess I had good enough experience. So the company I joined was here in downtown Jacksonville. It's an international moving company, Sadis. It's a company that is about 100 years old. So what they do, they move household goods for corporations and people, but they also move internationally. So they moved household goods internationally for people, for the companies. Having that experience with logistics and adding on to moving now, it was interestingly to see how logistics business is done here in the United States versus there, you know, back in Uzbekistan and Europe. But it also was fascinating to learn how to move household goods because it's a completely different industry. It's a different way of calculating tariff. It's a different way of customs processes. So professionally wise, it was interesting to learn a lot and embark on it. But I think what I enjoy the most is to serve people and help people through that transition because I've been through the transition moving lives across, you know, the ocean. Yeah. And I could empathize to see that there's so much involved into that. Moved through the time I stayed with them for over 10 years. I moved over 3,000 people worldwide. And I think I really enjoyed that part of it.
Yeah. Did you actually get to speak to the people? Did they give you the inventory of what they're trying to move?
Yeah. So I worked as a counselor and I worked with employees. So let's say if you have Delta that are relocating their employee Singapore to Miami, I would get their information. I will reach out to them and have a conversation with them about when they're moving, what their needs are, what their allowances the company is paying for, how the process works, what documents they need, what they can expect, what are the services they're going to receive. So we will have a very detailed discussion. And then through that beginning, all the way through the process, I'll be their point of contact. And then once they receive their goods back in Miami and settle in, then I will have a closure conversation. So it's a full moving services, but more of a hands-on with someone that you can call and rely on to what's going on and get your guidance from.
Because I guess some goods all need a carné, some goods don't need carnés, but they need other sort of paperwork. So and it's just managing. I suppose that could be an absolute nightmare if they're trying to ship a car or
You have cargo that goes by air, which is immediate needs, immediate things that you need. That takes air shipment actually takes about 2 to 3 weeks. And a lot of people are blown away because they think you can just show it on the airplane and get it there next day. that doesn't work that way. And then, of course, you have a container shipment. So that's where your heavy stuff, your sofas, your tables and chairs and et cetera will go in. And that can take, anywhere from, 6 to 8 weeks, probably longer, much longer than that right now with all the logistical things. So it's a big process to manage. And it's also, especially if you move with the families, it takes on a lot of stress to try to navigate that in addition to, acclimating to the new environment. If you're coming and you're coming here for work, you've never been in that country, you get to learn, what it is to, how do you go and guide your life and then set up a new job there in a new location and then manage your family affairs. And then, on top of it, your belongings, when are they coming and things like that. So there's a lot involved in relocation industry.
And are you still working in that industry?
No, I'm not. After that 10 years there, I actually decided to explore, invest in myself, get some certifications in the relocation and explore what it looks like on the corporate side. So that sphere is more of a providing of a services to corporations. And I've learned a lot there. I said, okay, what are my options? Where do I want to go from there? And I was really interested and intrigued what it is on the corporate side. What does it take for the corporate HR to move their employees? And what is the processes involved? How decisions are made and how people are being given different kind of support and allowance through those relocation companies and services. So I started doing research, aligned my LinkedIn with what I wanted, and got a call from a recruiter one day that they have an energy company looking for a mobility manager here in my town. And if I knew anybody or I'd be interested, I said, let's have a conversation. So I got a conversation, got some interviews and got a really good job that I accepted to work for that energy company. And that was basically embarking how to move employees. But more than that, because the company was having international projects and you have to know who do you send on this project, what nationalities can go there, what visas can they hold, what are their immigration status, what can they do in the country, can we pay them in the country, or can we pay them somewhere else where they are, or are they employed in the United States, they're going to be working in a different country for how long can they work there. So there's a lot of things that came into play with that. And it was fascinating to learn how global HR, global recruiting, global, labor compliance works. And kind of it's a different logistics. Now it was moving, not personal belongings, moving people's lives in a way. So it was really good. And I stayed there with that company for about 4 years until the end of 2020 when the COVID hit. the business went down. They had no international projects and they didn't really need a person, you know, who will provide relocation and immigration services. So since then, I decided to embark on my own journey. And I opened up my own company. It's called Advancing Globally. And now I'm helping people relocate from feeling stuck to feeling empowered. Mm. So I'm still relocating. I'm still moving. I'm just not moving goods. Now what I'm moving is I'm moving people's internal state from state of feeling unfulfilled, agitated, stuck, unhappy, stressed, into a different land, which is inside of you, where you can feel empowered, encouraged, you can be hopeful, you can build for yourself what you want. More importantly, you build yourself, because sometimes we focus so much on what we can achieve and what we can get, you know, next promotion, next big, you know, raise or this or that externally, that we forget that ultimately it is what is inside of us that truly matters the most. And what is inside of us and our perspective is going to then show up as a result in our lives. We can get that big next promotion. We can get that, you know, big raise and title, but we will still be miserable inside because it's not the happiness that is brought to you on a silver plate. It is the happiness that you generate within and then manifest in your life.
Mm.
That's what I'm doing right now.
And is it working? Are you successful?
It is working wonderfully. And the way it's working wonderfully is because I am on that journey myself. So when I'm going through the journey myself, from feeling stuck, from feeling unfulfilled, from feeling that I'm running like a hamster wheel all the time. And then I said, wait a minute, I don't want to live my life like this anymore. There is more to that. How do I align myself to where I want to be? How do I align myself to be more fulfilled? How do I discover what truly matters to me and stay and focus on the things that truly matter to me? So working through that journey has been very rewarding. And had I not gone through that, I probably wouldn't be able to help others through that either. So one of the exciting things that are happening right now, I just went through a program called Mental Fitness through Positive Intelligence, and it helps you to strengthen. So like imagine fitness, you're strengthening your body, right? You're bodybuilding. You're like, you're lifting weights every day. You can't get strong and build your body overnight. You're going to have to make it a habit. You have to either go to gym every day, or you're going to have a gym at home, but you have to do some kind of exercises every day. Well, guess what? The most important muscles in the way are in our brain, and we let those muscles just go blah because we don't practice and we don't exercise, and automatically they go into negativity. Automatically they slide into self-judgment, self-beating. So the mental fitness is this, the approach is that you need to learn how your brain operates, and then you have a framework that can help you exercise those mental muscles so that you change your self-command. When you see you're slipping into negativity, you see you're slipping into self-beating, you see you're slipping into anxiety, you have a self-command strong enough muscle to pivot and say, wait a minute, I am going to choose this that is helpful. I'm going to choose that is helpful. I'm going to focus on what I do want in my life, not what I don't want or what I hate or what is happening all the time. Be miserable for weeks. Mm. So it takes you a self-command. It's also called stamina, mental stamina. And people who have mental stamina, they're usually more successful. They're high achievers. But what I also like about that, and it's not about only achievement or success, it's about your happiness. And that mental stamina is recognizing that nobody's responsible for your happiness but you. And that is powerful because then you say, okay, I'm responsible for my happiness. So how do I do that? How am I happy? How can I be more happy? How can I be more, how can I have more fun in my life? Do what I love doing. Yes, be successful, be, you know, achieving all the things I want to achieve, but not at the cost of, you know, being miserable. There's so many people that have high titles, that have great, you know, compensation. They're on the top, but they're miserable because they have broken relationships and they are just unhappy person, unhappy people. So go after those dreams, go after those achievements, but don't do that at the cost of your own happiness and the relationships that matter the most to you in your life.
Well said. Well said. That's really, really good.
Thank you.
And I think, I think we all take a lesson there, all try to live our lives to be happy. And you don't have to be rich to be happy. You just have to enjoy your life.
Yes. It doesn't say that you don't thrive or strive for achieving or reaching to something better. It doesn't mean that you just lay on your sofa and watch Netflix all day and say, I'm happy, you know, whatever. You still take the action. You still make good choices and decisions to move your outward life and finances and relationship toward the progress that you desire. But ultimately, at what cost? Because I've run through, if you look at my career, you say, wow, so many different things, so many things you've done. But I've run so hard. As I was that high achiever and finishing the high school with A's, I always had this go, 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 do more, be recognized, be on the wall of fames, you know. But then as a hamster wheel, it's constant. Yeah. And as I was growing my family, I realized that I am giving 95% of my energy, who I am, to my job, and I'm giving leftovers to my family and my kids that I love the most. And a lot of people leave life like that. They think that they work because to support the family, but that their internal state, and that's how I see myself, my internal state was in unhealthy habits, because I would just be so exhausted to even be home because I'd spend it all out at work. And it didn't serve me well. And I said, okay, I can blame this and that. I can blame people. I can blame circumstances. But ultimately, it's my responsibility. So how can I take myself, you know, shake myself up? And how can I figure it out to create that space for myself where I have the life that I love living? And when you start thinking and framing it that way, you realize, yes, I want these things, or I want more freedom, or I want more financial circumstances to love the life that I'm living. But ultimately, looking at today, gosh, I love the life I'm living. I have everything I need. I have my kids here with me.
Yeah.
You know, I have a bread on the table. All things are good, right? We're breathing. We're alive. There's a lot of people that are on a deathbed today, and we've got blessing with this state, this breath, and this conversation. You know, as you're listening today, you're blessed. You're listening to something. You are alive. So find the gratitude in your heart. Find the things you're grateful for and thankful for today, and dream good things for yourself. Yeah. Dream how you want to feel inside. I think that's what's important. How do you want to feel? You want to feel alive. You want to feel joyful. You want to feel enthusiastic, hopeful. Feel it.
Well, there are so many people that get it the wrong way around. So many people think that you have to work to live instead of, or live to work rather than work to live. And if you get that work-life balance right, then your life is so much more fulfilled from it, and you'll be a lot more happier.
Yes.
So don't go out and think that you've got to work yourself to death to be able to live.
Don't do that.
I mean, it's easier said than done nowadays when you take into consideration the global crisis that we're in with everything going up apart from pay.
Yes, but still you are in control of your inner state. You know, absolutely. No matter what circumstances you're in, you are in control. So when you realize that you can control outward circumstances, you can control as much as we wanted our spouse or our children or other people around us, although we want to control them so much. And I've been there, you know, I've done that mistake. you can't control, but you can control yourself. You can control what you're feeding your mind, right? That story where, you know, the father was telling the child, well, there's two wolves living in your mind. One is black and one is white. And the black wolf gives you anxiety, guilt, you know, anger, frustration, you know, all of this negativities that, you know, evilness. And the white wolf is giving you love, joy, happiness, fulfillment, laughter, fun. And they constantly had a war with each other. And he said, well, which one's going to win, daddy? He said, the one you feed.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Feed, you won that.
Feed the white one.
To win. And that is self-command. That is self-control. That is where you're going to have to be conscious enough to notice what's going on in your own head. What thoughts are you feeding? What thoughts are you ruminating on? Yeah. And let go of all the garbage and start planting good seeds. Start planting good thoughts, hopeful thoughts.
Brilliant. That is a really good philosophy for life.
Thank you.
No, you're welcome. Thank you. Thanks for listening and look forward to the next one. Welcome to the Tim Hill Podcast. If you have the time, you can not only listen to the episodes, but you can also watch all the shows, and you'll find the links in the description below. Thank you.